Hello there, Ari Rosenbaum here with another fun-filled episode of that 4K podcast. This week we're going to talk about falling back into plan sponsors' role, the need for the plan sponsor to fall back into their role as a 401k plan sponsor. And of course, let's talk about some of the events that we're going to be hosting and for your enjoyment and whatnot. On October the 22nd, that's a Thursday, we're going to have that 401k virtual lunch with Teresa Conti. She's the president at Sun Life Pensions, which is a TPA out west. Teresa's been a guest of mine at some of the events. I remember Denver, and she'll probably remind me of the other event, but that 401k conference. The next day, we're going to have that 401k virtual conference 7. So, that's going to be fun, noon Eastern to 2 o'clock. After that, on November the 20th, we're going to have another that 401k virtual conference, numero 8, numero 8, as I would say. And, of course, the big event in January 21, 22nd, that 401k National Virtual Conference. Special guests, Walt Frazier on day 1, special guest, Doc Gooden on day 2. We're going to have some great speakers and whatnot. Sherry Fitz will talk about marketing and quite the interesting group of presenters, auditors. Pension Insurance will be there talking about auditing. We have a lot of great content spread over 2 days, and we'll make some more announcements of some of the people that will also be in attendance as speakers. As we get closer to the event, we'll obviously come out with an agenda. Early bird special for attendees to sign up, $20.21, $100 extra if you want some autographs, $120 extra upon that if you want a t-shirt as well. Go to fmrksite.com to sign up, because come Thanksgiving, we're just going to switch out and increase the attendance fee. It's not going to be, it's not going to be $100, but it'll be obviously more expensive than the early bird. So, this topic, falling into the role as a 401k plan sponsor, obviously, I think 99% of the 401k plans out there is using a 1231 plan year end. I mean, I've had my handful of off-calendar year plans to last a lifetime dealing with 401k plans, but the fact of the matter is that, most are calendar year. Fiscal year to me never made any sense, especially when dealing with participants and 402G being an annual participant deferral limit, and working with TPAs that when dealing with off-calendar year plans, they never looked at the calendar year to see if a participant flattered 402G, which I found problematic, but, that's why I no longer work for TPAs. I no longer work for mediocre TPAs. I've yet to really work for a really great one. Sorry for the people that's, hear that. But anyway, for plan sponsors, number one, I think, they need to realize is that they're fiduciary for the entire plan year. Everybody, over the summer, it's kind of dead. People take off. It's kind of lackadaisical. I always find my business tails off a little bit. Plan fiduciaries are not really up to snuff. And when Labor Day rolls around, they get a little bit more interested, but they really need to identify that they are a, plan fiduciary for the entire plan year. They need to get off of this, 1231's coming, and maybe I should start paying attention. They need to start paying attention for the entire year. Let's talk about fall. Fall is my least favorite season. I live in New York. Fall, I used to joke, equals death, because fall is all about foliage and the leaves falling off the trees and the days getting shorter. There was nothing worse or more depressing in my life than being a freshman, my freshman semester at Midwood High School, and getting out at 3:53. We'd get in at 10 o'clock and we'd leave, I think it was 11th period, was 3:53. Take the city bus, take two city buses, wouldn't get home till 4:45, and it was already dark out, come November. Thankfully, not really thankfully, but a couple of my friends got jumped. my high school, Middlewood High School, was in this part of Brooklyn called the Junction, which was Nostrand Avenue, Flatbush Avenue, just about a couple blocks away, right next to Brooklyn College. And my friends they got out at 3:53 like I did, but the problem was the junior high kids from the nearby junior high got out earlier, so they actually jumped a friend of mine and almost tried to steal his jacket. If it wasn't for Dean saving him, who knows what would have happened. But thanks to that incident, the following semester we would get out at 3:10, which is a little bit more manageable. But I find, you know, I'm not one of those people that gets depressed about the early darkness anymore, because I work from home and it doesn't affect me. I'm no longer on the Long Island Railroad and coming back, and you know, the day's over. But I hate the fall, because fall then, you know, eventually becomes winter, and I'm a big spring and summer guy. But anyway, you know, another reason that plant sponsors really need to get up to snuff is, you know, it's the end of the year. The reason, you know, it's time to do it, you know, to think about the fall and get more involved, because there's certain tasks that, you know, a plant sponsor may not be able to accomplish so quickly. You know, if you don't accomplish it by 12/31 or December the 1st, you know, it could be a problem. So, you know, plant sponsors really need to take that ginkgo and be a little bit more focused on, you know, what's going on for, you know, the rest of the plant year. Of course, you know, number one thing is the issue of the Safe Harbor match. Now, the SECURE Act changed the approach to the Safe Harbor non-elective. You no longer need a notice. Thank you. Thank you, government. You can also now amend and add a Safe Harbor non-elective at any time during the plan year, and even after the plan year is over, as long as you bump it up. And that's thanks to the SECURE Act. We don't have that for the Safe Harbor match, and it makes sense why we don't, because the Safe Harbor match is dictated on people deferring, and people need to know whether they should defer or not. You know, the availability match is a great enticement for plant participants to defer. You know, it's kind of free money. If you put away a couple bucks for deferral, you may get a match that, you know, it's close to 100, you know, close to 100% of your pay if you're only putting in three, and then, you know, quite a bit when it's you know, if you're putting away five, you're looking at 80%. Obviously, if you put in more, the match makes less of your, deferrals, because you have that limit. But, you know, it's really important for plan sponsors to identify that they have to put in a Safe Harbor match if they're failing, or failure has been a big problem, because they really have to put in a notice by December the 1st. We still have that 30-day requirement that, again, the Safe Harbor non-elective, we don't even have a notice requirement, which, I still think, yeah, it's always a good idea to let participants know that they're getting a contribution, but, you know, legally required, that's no longer the case. So plan sponsors really need to understand that, you know, before long, December the 1st is here, and if they want a Safe Harbor match for 2021, they got to put it in place. If they don't put it in place, it's not going to work out, and, you know, it's... For a lot of plan sponsors, it just might make complete sense to put in a Safe Harbor match, especially, you know, you're failing testing. The issues, you know, surrounding the Safe Harbor match, again, you know, the problem that I always had with Safe Harbor, and thankfully they changed after the non-elective, is for a lot of plan sponsors, you don't know that they failed until after the year is over. With a match, you don't have that option of now with the Safe Harbor profit, where you look after the end of the plan year and say, you know what, I'd like to put away a Safe Harbor non-elective because, you know, I want to avoid giving refunds. And, you know, because the match is tied to deferrals, you just really can't do that. So that's why it's really important for plan sponsors to understand, you know, why it's important to get back into things and figure out that the Safe Harbor match might be a good fit. Next thing they really have to do is to review the plan document. Now, here's a funny story. I always talk about, you know, certain events. You know, when I look back at my childhood, I always thought the most traumatic event outside of, you know, family dying, my grandparents dying, was the Space Shuttle Challenger exploding, and there was a great Netflix special on it. Brought back a lot of memories, most of them not good. And, you know, The Challenger means a lot to me because that was the first, like, really big traumatic event that happened, you know, dealing with national events and dealing with, you know, an event that affected all Americans. You know, the blackout in New York City when I was 5 really didn't mean much to me because I didn't really know what was going on with the looting and all that stuff. And when you're 14, you know, or 13, you're you know, obviously a lot more mature than when you were 5. So anyway, sometimes when you look at some of the really tragic events, sometimes I will find, or, you know, really crazy events, I will remember the crazy parts of it that can kind of make me laugh. September 11th kind of stands out because, you know, I remember working in Syosset, working for this TPA, and my buddy Rich Larita hears that a plane hits, you know, the World Trade Center. And my friend Rich was trying to say, oh, you know, it's an accident. When the second, you know, I said, I don't think that's an accident. Broad daylight. And then, of course, the second plane hit. And it was just weird. You know, I felt like the world was coming to an end. It just, you know, I was in such shock when it happened. And I had tickets for Les Mis that night. And for people that don't know, I love Broadway musicals. And my favorite musical of all time is Les Mis. Love the movie. I'm sure there are better shows out there. One could say Showboat or Oklahoma, which I've seen. I've both seen. But I love that show. And I had tickets with my then girlfriend, who's now my wife. And we got these cheap TDF tickets. It was like $50, and it was going to be orchestra. So I think it was September 11th, was a Tuesday, and I work in Syosset. So both towers collapse. I don't know, remember if the other parts had collapsed. I think there were a couple of other buildings of World Trade Center that collapsed later in the afternoon. And my mother calls me up. And she was working in Brooklyn as a teacher. And she calls me up and she says, well, she had this really piercing, Hungarian accent. And it was like, Ari, I don't want to do the impression, but Ari, are you going to the show tonight? And I said, what? Are you going to the show tonight? You have tickets. I don't think it's a good idea. So I said to my mother, the Twin Towers fell. They think that 10,000 people have died. They've evacuated Manhattan south of Canal Street. The Long Island Railroad is not running. And I said, somehow there is not going to be a show tonight. Of course, there wasn't. There wasn't for like a week, a few days or a week or so. And anyway, I got my money back. When the Great North American Blackout happened, that was in August of 2003. I think it was August 19th. I don't remember the day. But anyway, I was working at this TPA place. And it was close to 4 o'clock, if I remember. And the lights go dark. I mean, it just goes, it's just, you know. And you think it's a temporary thing, and I had a paralegal that I was working with who was all paranoid and thought that this was some kind of terrorist act. And I realized the power wasn't going to come out on for quite some time, and I think we were the first people at that job to leave and try to walk home. I walked 12 miles back to Forest Hills. So my point, which I'll finally get to it, the intercom still worked because it was battery-powered. Some of the lights still work because it was battery powered, you know, the exit lights and whatnot. And the boss, the guy who's the head of the company, goes on and says, you know what, maybe this is the time you could read that ERISA book that I gave everybody. It was like a small little pamphlet about ERISA and whatnot. He gave it out to everybody. And so I laughed about it because, you know, he expected people to stay and, you know, I left and never did get to read that ERISA book. And so what I'm saying is, my point finally is, this is really the time during the fall to start, you know, reviewing something like the plane document. You know, plane sponsors really need to do that. This is the time to make a change if you need to make a change. You know, if you want to change eligibility, I'm the kind of attorney who, I like things, clean ends, clean starts and clean ends. And that's why I always love everything that happens around 12/31. You know, if I'm going to make a change for a plan, I want to make it January 1. And the reason is because it's a clear break from the previous year. You know, moving TPAs, I hate that during mid-year. I love to do a 12/31. So then, you know, when we change TPAs, there's not a problem of who's doing the final 5,500. And so, I mean, the last year's 5,500, and nobody drops the ball, and coordinating the testing, and this and that, and the data and all that kind of crap. I like clean beginnings and clean endings. And so, therefore, I think that it's really a great idea for the plan sponsor to start looking at, you know, changes that they would want to make. You know, when it comes to plan amendments, I'm a strong advocate of the KISS theory, which is keep it simple, stupid. Any substance changes that are retroactive or prospective, you know, it may make things more difficult to administer. And I always say keep it simple, stupid. Make it easier on the administrator. Anything that's intricate and, you know, confusing is only going to heighten the risks of a plan error in administration. And of course, now is the time to review the plan documents. It also is a great time to review plan fees, plan providers, make plan provider changes. You know, again, I like making changes for the plan, you know, effective January 1st. But also, you know, it's a good time to look at the fee disclosures that most plan sponsors have ignored for the entire year. You know, they treat them like the privacy notices that they get from the bank and they throw in the garbage. As a plan fiduciary, they have to determine what the fees charged to the plan are reasonable for the service provided. And, you know, you really can't fulfill that duty. You know, the plan sponsor really can't do that if they don't benchmark fees, listen to the fee disclosure. And, you know, whether they put up the 401k plan up for bid or use a service or publication to benchmark fees, it's something that they really have to do. You know, they have a duty of prudence as a plan fiduciary. That means they have to review their plan providers to make sure that they're doing a, you know, good enough job as they promised. You know, plan sponsors really just can't simply take the plan provider's words that everything is A-OK, because a lot of times they don't realize that it's not A-OK because they made an error and they didn't realize it. So, you know, again, I like simple and clean. That's why it's better to use January 1st as, you know, the time when you're going to make a change for a TPA or another plan provider. Mid-year changes, again, I don't like them. I just think it allows people, it's kind of like, you know, in baseball, fly balls hit, and, you know, it's a matter of, you know, two of the outfielders, you know, calling for it, and sometimes there's a collision, and sometimes nobody calls it, and the ball drops. And the problem is that I find as a ERISA attorney, there's far too much ball dropping, and that's a problem, especially dealing with the plan's tax qualification. And last but not least, you know, I find it a great time to review bond and insurance coverage. You know, quite honestly, when dealing with an ERISA bond, you have that 10%, you know, requirement, and, you know, too often plan sponsors don't realize that their plan has outgrown the value of the bond, and they have to increase their limits in order to be fully compliant with ERISA. And the same thing goes for future liability insurance. Plan assets grow. That means liability exposure grows. You know, listen, the folks at Pintegra, they just got sued on their map, on one of their legacy maps. And, you know, they're big enough to be a target for a Jerry Schlichter. So, you know, of course, over the years, I'm sure their coverage requirements have gone up. You know, that's a firm that's very, very serious when it comes to ERISA requirements and whatnot. So, you know, I think that this is, a perfect time. You're coming on a 12/31 balance. It kind of gets you to understand where you're going in terms of the end-of-year balance. And that is a perfect time to look at coverage and to make sure that the plan sponsor is still properly insured in terms of the ERISA bond, which we know is required, and the fiduciary liability insurance, which is what I recommend but is not legally required. So there's certain things, like I said, it's a great opportune time, like reading an ERISA outline book, not the ERISA outline book, Salchavise book, but another ERISA-type book when there's a northeastern blackout. That's probably not the right time to read it, but I will say that it's a perfect time. The fall is the perfect time for plant sponsors to get back in action and take their plants seriously, as the end of the year is really quickly upon us. It's hard to believe it's October. It's, you know, back in March, I thought this pandemic thing would have petered out after about a month, and here we are in month number 7. I feel like I'm a Gilligan's Island in terms of how long I'm marooned. But hopefully we'll get through this, and hopefully we'll come back with some live events in 2021. But listen, we got some good virtual events, and whether it's a Google meeting or, a Zoom meeting, and it's a great time to meet up virtually. In conclusion, go to that4kSite.com to sign up for that 4K National Virtual Conference on January 21, 22, 2021. And then see the links to sign up for that 4K Virtual Bunch with Teresa Conti on October 22nd and that 4K Virtual Conferences October 23rd and November 20th. And we'll pretty soon have a date for December. So thank you for listening, and hope you tune in next week. Thank you so much. Take care. Bye.